If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for Closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Astar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the light and love of the Most Radiant One. I am Commander Lady Athena, and you are listening to the voice of the Astar Command. This evening our topic is the teachings of Shambhala. It has been my great honor and privilege to be a conscious pupil of a master and his family who were Shambhala masters living on the earth. They were a Russian family, fully enlightened, ascended masters one and all, and yet living in the outer world, a seemingly ordinary life. And I would like to share tonight some of the things they taught me, some of the things they're still teaching me, and to impart a blessing to those of you listening tonight, for it's not by accident that you're hearing of these sacred teachings. Now is the time to speak in the open things that before were whispered in the airs in the deep crevasses and caves of Shambhala. Now is the time for the telling of the full truth. But only those who are called can hear, even though they have ears. Only those who are awakened can see, even though we all have eyes. Because it is the inner ear that hears the truth and the inner eyes that see the face of God. And it is that that we are concerned with here. The outer world is simply a reflection of what we have within us. No more, no less. So take a deep breath and relax and bring all of your attention quietly to the inner self, that inner universe that you wear as your awareness and consciousness. Sense the energies coruscating throughout your body, your mind, your fingers, your toes, every part of your being is alive. Know, beloved, know with every fiber of your being that you are a vast and cosmic being. You have never been born, nor can you ever die. You are birthless, you are pure, you are vast. There is no beginning or ending to the divine glory that is the self, the true self that you are. Know that these energies that you are feeling rushing through your innermost being, begin to identify self as eternal right now. The accumulations of every experience that has been glorious and birthed of truth, of your spirit, of love, of bravery, of courage, of dauntless devotion, of daring, heroic acts in all the many projections of consciousness and the myriad of worlds without end, multiple dimensional outpicturings of the many aspects of the consciousness that you are, all of the sum total of all those embodiments reside within you as the self that we would call the divine Atma, the divine self. Your unique energetic embodiment and signature touches to the farthest worlds of divine, perfected immortality. And your full spectrum of consciousness can bring its awareness down to the slowest vibrating little quark of existence. And you can do that while remembering your wholeness. And in that divine act, you become a savior, imparting divine awakening, illumination, and loving truth throughout the whole time-space continuum. That is what you do, beloved, as you walk through your daily life, the seemingly ordinary, which are far but ordinary moments of your existence. I wish to call to your remembrance who you are, and that awareness may so permeate every cell of your being that you never lose sight of it, waking or sleeping, dreaming, or caught up and engaged in the most vivid activities. You can forget all else, but never forget who you are. And your purpose, beloved, is to imbue every part of your consciousness with conscious participation with the cosmos. Conscious participation with the cosmos. For only in human life can you perfect your cosmic attunement. The awakening of spirituality is not an option. It is a cosmic requirement. Cosmic sensitivity, response, and harmonic attunement to the great cosmic ocean of consciousness and the streams on the event horizon that rise like so many waves and then are submerged into the cosmic sea again of energy. We are to surf this divine sea, fully in control of the vessel of our life. That is what is taught in Shambhala. So we are divine fire, the fire of spirit. We are what is called the flaming chalice. For the uppermost part of the body, the torso and the head centers, form the Zohar body, the fifth body of divine glory that enables you, like Elijah and Enoch, to be caught up and see not death, but to walk consciously with God. That flaming chalice is ignited by dauntless striving to the great ideal. What is the great ideal? In the terms of Shambhala, it's called the cosmic magnet. What is the cosmic magnet? It is quite simply the heart of God, or the great, 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 great central system of the sun, that glorious repository in the innermost center of the divine imperishable star worlds, from whence we were birthed, through the exhalation of the one all that is. Birthed only in sense of extended rays, but never departure from that great cosmic magnet. And as we were exhaled, so to speak, into myriad of worlds as conscious sentiency, so now the great inbreathing is taking place, and we are called to return home on that same breath of divine glory. So, as you breathe out, breathe in and return to the cosmic magnet of the divine heart of the all that is. It is said in the scriptures, my ministers are a flame of fire. So visualize your whole body as a flame of beautiful purple and blue and silver and ruby, non-burning fire of bliss, of divine love. No, this is not the kind of fire that burns. It's not hot. Rather, it is cool and soothing. The only thing that burns is that which is not true of you. And when you walk as a flame of fire, as a candle before the house of God, before the tabernacle of the Most High, when you walk in that divine state, all that is like, oh, let's say a moth rushing to the flame, gets fried at the periphery of your aura, all negativity. And you walk in a perfect protection in this and a myriad of worlds. You will walk, my beloveds, from this world through the star systems into the new era, which is a time more glorious than any of us have the words to describe. That is your destiny. That is where your feet are walking, even as we speak this evening. What I speak of is not metaphor, it is absolute truth. I was taught by the master Nicholas Rorick and his great son, Svetoslav Rorick, and his great mother, Helena Rorick, whom I consider as my own family. And they had another brother, another son, by the name of Yuri, or George Rorick, whom I never met, but have since met upon the inner plains, where the family is now gathered, each having crossed over in recent years. It happened like this. I will tell a little of my story, because perhaps some of you have had strange encounters, but you didn't quite know the significance of them. It was 1969, and I had a sudden great urge to sketch what I thought was an extraterrestrial. But it turned out to be a rather good portrait, given it was sketched in less than 10 minutes, of a master that I didn't recognize. I didn't know who he was. He had a white beard and very piercing, beautiful eyes, a high dome, noble forehead, and obviously a master. About that same time, I met my first contact with the teachings of Agni Yoga, which is the teachings of the Rorick family, given through Helena Rorick by all of the masters of Shambhala, but specifically her own master, the Master Moria, or the Master M. And so I was given a book, or actually, before I was given a book, I had a vision, a conscious waking vision, of where a master came to me, dressed in what I thought might have been the robes of a pope. They were bright gold brocade, and maroon. Very, very ornate and beautiful. I have since learned that those are the high Tibetan Lama's robes that the master had on that day. And I didn't know who he was. So I walked up to him and I said, "Who are you?" And he said in a deep and resonant voice, as those masters so often have, "I am your teacher, child." And he said that three times, which again I understand is characteristic of these masters. They often will repeat in triplicity what they have to say. "I am your teacher, child. I am your teacher, child," he said to me. And then he vanished, and I did not know who he was. But as my life and events unfolded, very rapidly from that point. A book was given into my hands by some people who were told, give it to me. And it was about Nicholas Roerich. And I opened up the front page, and there, in black and white, was the exact master in the exact garment that appeared inwardly to me. And thus began my conscious studies with the masters of Shambhala. And when I first encountered the books of Helena Roerich, the Atma Yoga series, there are 17 in all, if you count her, the compilation of her letters, which form two of the volumes. And there are, according to Nicholas Roerich's son, Svetoslav, there are still 120 untranslated from the Russian and unpublished manuscripts, which will await the future root race because they are, in fact, too advanced for people of this world today. But you can indeed purchase these books. We are so fortunate in America to have access to these teachings very openly. But now with the Internet, anyone could order the Agni Yoga books and read them. So as I began to voraciously study these books, and I bought them all at once, you know, I just looked at all of these little blue and red and yellow small books, thick books, but small. I said, whatever these are, I want all of them. And I ran home and I gathered up all the books I could find that I could trade in. And I ran back and I got the books. And, you know, back in those days, they weren't that expensive. They were like $7 each or something like that. Now they're a bit more. But thus began my studies of Agni Yoga. Move forward a few months, and we moved from Yucca Valley, where we were living at the time, the high desert of California, where I am now again, in the high desert. We moved to Santa Barbara. And there I began to study yoga with a woman who happened to know Svetoslav Roerich, of all things, and she also was Russian. And she was also the co-worker of another Russian woman who became my yoga teacher, Indra Devi. And so Indra Devi and this woman, Helen Vreeland, became my yoga teachers. And also, this became eventually one of the first Sai Baba centers in America. So it all began with my first trip to India after being involved with Sai Baba since 1969 also. She said, you're going to India, and I'm going to write a letter of introduction to Svetoslav Roerich. That's Nicholas Roerich's son. And you can take the letter and give it to him and meet him. Well, I was much too shy to do that, you know, to walk up to some strange person and say, here, knock on the door, here is a letter of introduction. Well, that didn't happen that way. What happened was that John Roger, whom I had gone to India with, and Indra Devi and several of us who were part of that trip, went to eat at the West End Hotel, which is a popular place, at least in those days, to eat and to stay in Bangalore, India. And I was told that morning to take that letter of introduction from Helen Vreeland and put it in my purse. So I obeyed. And sure enough, as we walked into the West End Hotel, two ladies in beautiful saris walked by, and I was looking at the ladies with the saris. And the woman next to me, Muriel Engel, was closely involved with all of the above, said, isn't that the son of, what's his name, that artist? I said, Svetoslav Roerich. And she said, yes, that's Svetoslav Roerich. So here I had literally crossed paths with this great soul, which I had asked to do because I was too shy. So I had asked the Lord, I said, if I'm to meet him, this is my destiny, then you're going to have to cross his path with mine so that can happen. So I went up to him and gave him the letter of introduction, and he looked up at me with these most piercing, incredible eyes, which I happen to be looking into as I'm doing my show tonight. I have his picture in front of me. And he finished his meal, and then he came out and joined all of us and sat and talked. And then when we got up to leave, again, his eyes fastened on mine, and it felt like electricity was shooting from his beautiful dark eyes into mine. And he told me telepathically, "Come to me. Come to my office." And I nodded, and I said, "Yes, I will." So that's what began 22 years of conscious study with Svetozar Rorik, and many, many experiences that I had as I would travel back and forth to India and spend months at a time, going to Darshan to see Sai Baba and returning to visit with Svetozar. Every day this was my program that I was under. During that time, he revealed to me that I had incarnated with the Rorik family 5 times in strategic moments of, the shifting of the cosmos in terms of new era and the unfoldment of new programs. And even though at the time I was still quite young and wasn't really conversant like I am today with the deeper teachings, I knew what he meant, and it resonated in my heart. And then began the most intense experience of my life. As my chakras opened, and your chakras can only fully open when you hit age 30, according to the masters of Shambhala. And I was at that time 29 years old. So my chakras opened, and first it was one chakra, and then the next, and then the next. And the chakras opening were very painful when it came to my head centers, because the crown chakra, it feels like you have the most intense headaches when that center opens, and you have many visions and many things that occur to you. So I had to have the opening, I was told later, in the direct presence of the masters, otherwise it would have been dangerous for me. So again, I want to stress to you that your master teachers are always with you. They are beside you. You are constantly in their vision. Last 2 shows back, we took you to see your tariff in Shambhala, a little image that your master keeps check on to see how you're progressing. It reflects your aura and your state of consciousness. But more than that, there's technology in Shambhala that can enable the closest scrutiny of your energy and your consciousness when that's required. And so you're never alone. You're never overlooked. You're never forsaken. It's important to know with all the full trust of your being that you belong to God, and that there's a whole family of light that has been, let's say, assigned to work with you and to guide you and teach you and to unfold you into your full destiny as a Christ-conscious master. So trust that. Believe in it. Know it. And just sense right now the presence of the teacher right with you right now. And the masters of Shambhala, they're right with you right now. Just be aware of it. Trust it. Believe it. Know it. And know that this life is like a single pearl on a strand of endless pearls. But it's brief. It's this little episode is like a blink of the eye. And then the next. But you carry the totality of your essence of accumulations from pearl to pearl, from episode to episode. So that you're not just this lifetime, but you may have become so engaged and involved in this lifetime that you've lost sight of your bigger picture. So during these shows, I hope to expand your awareness to the fact that you are living an eternal life right now, this very second. You will never die. You'll never cease to exist. But to develop a conscious identity on the inner planes, what happens is this. Gradually, as you accumulate experiences, and the true experiences are deposited into the chalice, that upper, let's say, torso, which opens up in a great chalice-like formation, the accumulations begin to form, let's say, a sedimentation of resonances within you. And certain events in your life, when they occur, will jiggle those things to your conscious awareness. That's why sometimes you'll have intense visions or intense senses of knowing, and you really can't trace it to where it comes from. It just arises, and it's ephemeral too. Just as quickly it can evaporate. It doesn't dissolve. It's just like something arising on the surface of the sea, and then you know the sea subsumes it. So again, the subtle intuitions of the spiritual planes, the higher you get, the more exquisitely subtle they become. And so you have to bypass the tendency to want to grab knowledge with your linear mind. And you have to move into the direct knowing. Once you have studied the teachings, you begin to trust the knowing. The knowing doesn't have an explanation. It doesn't have a rationale. It just is. And the isness is a conviction within your spirit that this is the way it is. This is so. And you feel it so strongly that, you know, there's no doubt anywhere in your being. That's what you go with as the truth, knowing that if it is truth, it is eternal, and it cannot be modified or changed or altered. It simply is that which is. So every nuance of good that you've ever done in any existence, every brave moment, every selfless act of service has not gone unnoticed. It has all been accumulated in your chalice. Now, a soul that is an old soul, a ripened soul, like those of you who are drawn to listen tonight, you begin to overflow. Your chalice begins to spill over. And I'm going to segue a moment to the children who are coming in now, because many children coming in are the bearers of the flaming chalice, and they are heavily burdened by the accumulations of previous lifetimes in bodies that are still not quite able to sort themselves out. I had also that problem as a child. I would have out-of-body experiences, and I wouldn't have any knowledge of how to process them when I came back in my child's body, except to cry and to not want to go to sleep or take naps, because I knew I would be back in those war situations and rescuing souls and doing things. So your sensitive children often have nightmares, and they will cry out in the night. They also will have fevers sometimes. I had 2 weeks of incredibly high fevers, and I was very, very sensitive as a child. They often will have tummy aches because the solar plexus chakra is the one that receives the rays from the higher worlds. And in a child's body, they don't have any way to process or assimilate those energies. Also, you'll see startling revelations of truth as these children speak sometimes. It's like their chalice is uncovered for a moment, and they'll speak the most profound things, and then the covering comes again. So these unusual children, which are now flooding our earth in preparation for the new earth, they need to be protected and not allowed excessive negative stimulation. Watching a negative program on television when they're so highly impressionable can damage them for a long time to come. I remember my parents when I was very young, maybe 5, 6 years old, took me to awful horror movie, which gave me nightmares and fear. It was the first time I ever experienced fear as a child, but it lasted throughout just up until maybe 30 years ago. I would have fear at night, all from that one stupid movie. So guard your children from ugly, banal, violent, stupid things, and cultivate their consciousness with beauty, with music, with culture, with upliftment, and with the lives and documentaries and examples of noteworthy people, people who have done great things with their lives and have striven to accomplish noble objectives. This is needed more than anything else in today's world. So your immortal spirit, your divine spirit kernel, your I Am That I Am presence, is ever one with God. But as an individualized, unique soul, you are creative intelligence itself. You are the conscious expression of love, joy, and awareness. And the soul, that part of you is always happy and at peace.
That's the inner knower. That's the one that knows. And this self, this soul self, this creative intelligence portion, is nourished and fed by self-giving and selfless service. So every positive and divinely connected and infused thought, word, and deed is ineradicable, according to the masters of Shambhala. Every thought, word, and deed is eternal and goes forth to create on the inner planes in like manner. That's why one day those of you who have been on this path, the Shambhala path, will actually go into the inner planes and you will see the trees and the flowers and the temples and the beautiful parklands and other things that you have created, the beautiful architecture that you have created out of your thoughts, out of your words, out of your actions. Because you're made in the image and likeness of your Father, the Creator, everything that you do is also creative. There's no way you cannot be creative. So there is conscious creativity, which is very, very highly manifested. And then there is unconsciousness, or as the masters call it, light-mindedness. And the light-mindedness is what we need to guard against. Today, people have the habit, of particularly the youth, of going, whatever, particularly here in Hollywood. That's like a saying, you know, so whatever. There is no whatever. There is only diligence and conscious awareness and conscious choice to be a co-participant in cosmos, which is what we are in training to be. We're already that on one level, so we're just bringing up all the levels to that speed, to where we are completely synthesized in the awareness of who and what we are, whether we're in the physical, the astral, the causal, the mental, the etheric, or into the higher soul planes. We are always who we are, and aware and a conscious participant in our lives. That is what we need to work with. Now, one of the first things that the masters taught me, Master Rorick, was that every day and everything I do, to strive to do it with more and more excellence. You know, even something as simple as putting on my sari, every day was to try to make it more and more perfect, more and more conscious, more and more beautiful, so that there are no throwaway expendable moments. Every moment is part of your training as an initiate. Albeit this is the first time we have ever been initiates and disciples of Shambhala and living in the outer world, for heaven's sakes. Normally, we would not be living in the outer world, having ordinary jobs and going about living ordinary lives. But because we're living in the time of the externalization of the hierarchy and the externalization of the earth and celestial lords and ladies of light, we are called to be in the world, but not of it. Very few of us are called to be sannyasis or recluses at this time. We're encouraged to take everything that we gain in those lives of monasticism and to bring it to bear in the daily realm that we operate in. But to live as a master within that realm in self-containment, self-control, patience, kindliness, and self-giving. And to do that, you need to each morning gear up for your day, psych up for your day. Don't just launch into it light-mindedly, but get up in enough time that you can spend some time in prayer, in attunement, in centering yourself, so that when you go forth in your day, you are integrated, aligned, and prepared for what you need to do. And then you send the light ahead of you to clear any imbalances and to set the energies for your day. And you say it just like that. You know, I send the light ahead of me, the light of the Christ, to clear anything that's imbalanced or unnecessary in my environment today. And I place the energies of whatever is for my highest good in my workplace or whatever, wherever your environment is going to be for that day. This is very important. Those of you that are teachers need to put the light around your children and ask that any imbalances that they may have brought from home or their particular situation could be cleared, and that they can have the peace of mind and the quiet to begin to absorb their lessons when they're in their classes. So in every situation, take charge and dominion of your environment and bring it into alignment with that which is your purpose for the day. You are always on assignment from hierarchy. always, always, always. There is no time when you are off duty. We are to move to this earth, send the light every time we come into a situation to bring in greater light, greater awareness, greater love, greater joy. Our very aura, when we walk through a room, can shift and change the whole dynamic. And also imbalances, if you have the greatest light field in a given area, those imbalances are going to rush to you like moths to a flame and are going to be transmuting through you. So you need to, ahead of time, ask that the angels, violet and blue, and the Christ-conscious souls that work with transmutation to transmute and prepare the area that you're going to be entering into. Or say, for example, you go into a restaurant. You need to clear the space where you're going to be having your meal. And you can always ask the light be placed for clearance according to the highest good of everyone that is in that particular environment. So you don't violate people's consciousness if you say, whatever is for the highest good of all concerned. That leaves you off the hook. You're not playing God, but you're being responsible for the light and the awareness that you are carrying. So, distortions and ego momentums are also fiery, but they attract the lower fire. And the lower fire consumes all of the negativity that's not part, in other words, the cosmic dross. And that is called the Yeshod in Hebrew, which means the devouring, consuming fire. But it's also a manifestation of the divine fire, but in a lower capacity of burning the chaff, so to speak. There's many metaphors of that in the Bible about the chaff being burned. So the chaff is unloving, unconscious, and negative and unaligned momentums that the ego self has projected into time and space. And people that have their lives that are just that, nothing else, those are the ones that have the near-death experiences of purgatory or hell, because evil destroys itself. So people can actually attract to themselves destruction by being willfully negative and willfully evil. And we don't need to get into that too much, because you wouldn't be listening to me if you were of that ilk. But when we speak of hell or purgatory, those are the areas where that fire consumes the dross that is not part of your divine manifestation, not part of your truth expressing through you. So when you come under the mentorship of a master from Shambhala, they will not announce themselves as that. They won't lay claim to being that at all, because all the higher masters are wrapped in silence in terms of themselves, and they must be spiritually discerned and intuited. What you will notice in their presence is they have a burning intensity, a deep burning love of God, and a reverence for all life. This was so characteristic of Svetoslav Rorik. He fairly burned with intensity. Of course, he was a great, great artist, I think as great as his father, without a doubt, and certainly a greater portrait artist. But a vast artist, because he could paint spaceships from other worlds, he could paint prophetic paintings of things that were going to be happening on the planet, he could paint the village life and the beauty and color of the village life of India, because the whole family immigrated during the time of the Bolshevik revolution in Russia. They all immigrated to India. So they lived in India for most of their lives, I guess all of their lives, although they did travel to America in the 20s. And there's a huge museum in New York City that's called the Nicholas Rorik Museum. And at one time it was in a 21-story building. So he left, I believe it was 7,000. Nicholas Rorik left 7,000 beautiful paintings that are very, very expensive if you were to buy them today. But they carry this incredible vibration that will transform your consciousness at just standing and looking at them. So those of you in New York, you can go and see them. It's on Riverside Drive in New York City. I've been there, and it's, you know, you just stand there and weep when you stand in front of some of the paintings that are there. So The important thing I want to bring out to you is that this is the most important lifetime you've ever had. I don't care what. It is the crown jewel in your life. So it's time to put aside the things that are not really your best and bring to bear in whatever you have in your life now your very best. Whatever you do, do it with all your heart. Do it for the masters. Do it for the evolution of this planet and all people, that everyone could awaken to their divinity. Begin to live your every day as a divine assignment from God, which it most definitely is. So if you feel you are being benignly observed all the time, and know that you are. Everything, and I mean everything, in your life counts. And you are encouraged to do everything in your life with centered deliberation and with excellence. So, he also said to me, never seek without for what can only be found within. And never give any appearance of weakness. Never give in to any appearance of weakness. One time he was displeased with me, and I thought it was really interesting because I was going through some very, very intense things with the energies, being with Sai Baba and him, you know, every single day. And one day I was feeling ill, but not that ill, but I just chose not to go to Darshan. And Darshan meant a 17-mile, you know, trip by auto rickshaw or bus or taxi, you know, to Sai Baba, where his white field ashram was. And I just chose to stay in the hotel. And I remember Master Svetoslav said, he said, I am disappointed in you. And I was shocked. But he expected me to put, you know, the devotion to God, the devotion to going to Darshan before everything else. So even if you're dead or have to crawl there, you go to be with the Master. You go to be in the source of light, whatever that source of light is to you. If you have to crawl on your belly, you get there. You get under that anointing. You get in that place where you can receive. And I never, ever, after that, ever missed another darshan. No matter how sick I felt or what I was going through, I always went to darshan after that. I realized how strict the masters are. So we are always encouraged to advance and surmount and push beyond what we consider our limits. Always go the extra mile and develop that steadfast courage, tenacity, and personal bravery that won't let anything stop you. And never give up. Be so relentless that when your feet hit the ground in the morning, all the dark forces say, oh, no, she's up, he's up, huh, no, what are we going to do? You know, just be a real threat to the negative when you put your feet on the ground in the morning. So laziness and slack is never an option for a disciple of a Shambhala master. And the more advanced the soul, the more challenging your life path is usually. And the more varied. It's almost, you just almost never see a specialist that is a disciple of Shambhala. Because the very tenure and temper of our spirit, the very blade of our spirit, is honed by facing many challenges and constantly having to adapt to new situations and circumstances. So much in the same manner that a skilled rider prefers a spirited horse to test and temper his skills, so the advanced soul also chooses very difficult and challenging life paths. Whatever it is that you have in your life, just know that it's absolutely exactly what you called forward into your life because you needed it. And it's part of your process of self-mastery. There's no such thing as a victim or a person that's experiencing something against his higher plan and higher will. even if it takes some really dramatic and crazy outpicturings. In the end, it will all work itself together for good. Because, after all, everything down here is a play of shadows. It's all smoking mirrors. It's all magic beans. You know, there's nothing really happening here but the plays of consciousness to test you and try you and prepare you and make a master of you. That's what the whole gymnasium of Earth life is about, is to make a master out of you. So when you rise high enough in your consciousness and really get an eagle's eye view of your, or a soul's eye view of your life, everything will be seen to be perfect, just as it is, an imperfect divine order. There is never crisis. There's never an emergency crisis in the life of a disciple, of a conscious initiate of Shambhala, of a conscious disciple and initiate of the path. It just doesn't happen. You're given only what you can handle, but sometimes it's like 99.9.9% what you can handle. You know, it like brings you to where, you know, one more step and you're done. So that's part of the training. And it's done in everyday life. It's not done in any kind of mystical, you bring the mysticism to it by your awareness consciously that it's a spiritual action taking place. But otherwise, you're just doing life. You're doing traffic and kids and husbands and wives and jobs and bosses and getting fired and economy and stock market falling and earth changes and fires and floods and tornadoes and the host of stuff that's happening and coming down on the planet today. That's all part of it. It's all part of the gymnasium of the soul. And even if it looks like a body dies, nobody dies. You just take a step through another door into another area of life, and you continue on. You won't lose your loved ones. The bonds of love can never be broken. Know that. The bonds of love can never be broken. And love never fails. Love always succeeds. So whatever you do with love, with care, with attentiveness, has to come out right. So do whatever you do with love, with awareness, with consciousness, with devotion and dedication, and keep striving to the highest possible ideal that you can embrace of. Just really grab yourself by your boots and bring yourself up and consciously step into that alignment with the great cosmic core of life, which they call in Shambhala the great cosmic magnet. So your life is one governed by Dharma, with a D-H-A-R-M-A, which means divine behavior, divine duty, rather than karma, which would be the law of reciprocity. And you come under a flow of grace in which the laws which govern you are not the same as would govern those who are bound up with the ego. You begin to walk in a whole different path. So experientially, what this looks like is a very active and dynamic life that you're living, that while it's challenging and calling for continual adaptation and practice skill, still, it flows along rather magically, and all sorts of wonderful miracles and serendipitous encounters and perfect rescues at the 11th hour. All sorts of wonderful things happen. All sorts of divine assistance and things you couldn't even imagine comes in the moment to assist you when you need it. Because when you're in a state of love, that attracts to you everything that you need to support and to enhance your life. That's why it's so important to stay calm, in trust, in faith, in devotion, in love, and in surrender. How can God not show up for you when you're depending and relying on God 100%? God is bound to show up in your life when you live that way. He has to. It's his duty. It's his dharma. So conscious striving with all your heart at all times is what is so vitally important. And again, Master Nicholas Roerich and Helena and Svetoslav would stress how important conscious striving with all your heart at all times is. And again, you might ask, well, how? Well, very simply, by paying attention to whatever you're doing. And do it with reverence and love. You know, don't let your mind wander. When you're eating, eat. When you're talking to someone, don't be talking on the phone and text messaging and watching the TV and throwing a word into your conversation here and now. How are you ever going to develop one-pointed focus of spirit if you're constantly having like a shotgun kind of attention span? So it's very important to discipline yourself, to do what you do when you're doing it and be present with your action. When it's completed, then you go on and do the next thing. When you do that, you don't leave karmic residual. In fact, that's how you overcome addiction. You know, most people are addicted to things because they're never present with the action of what they're doing. If they were ever totally present with whatever it is they're doing, 100%, they would consume all desire to ever do anything again of that nature. It would be completed. Wouldn't have any trails. So stay present. And needless to say, cast out worry and doubt and those negative states of consciousness that come from people who are just simply undisciplined and allowing their minds and their emotions to run them. Quit it. You know, rise up inside yourself, know the truth that sets you free, and step free through grace. Follow the Master. Take his hand. Walk through him, with him or her through every day of your life. So it's actually very simple in practice, but it requires vigilance and commitment to keeping up that attentiveness, you know, so that you don't go light-minded and zone out. So when you're shopping, mowing your lawn, preparing your meals, eating your meals, being with your children or your spouse, focus fully on what you're doing and do it well and do it with all your heart. And that is the path of Shambhala. That is the path that the Shambhala masters will teach. So certain highly refined nerve centers resembling woven crystal are formed as you live this life in conscious attunement with Shambhala. And they develop in 7 near cycles. And these are the centers and the refined nerves that enable you to receive direct communication from the masters of Shambhala. Not channeling, none of that. I'm talking about conscious co-participatory interactions in high levels of consciousness with these higher levels of consciousness. So it requires your self-discipline and being attentive and taking care of your instrument and honoring yourself, you know, honoring yourself and your process. So the gradual spiritual accumulations develop in each of your subtle bodies and sheets of awareness until eventually you can divide your spirit, so to speak, and cooperate in more than one body at the same time. And this is what the great masters are able to do, so that they can be in many places at the same time and do many things at the same time. And, of course, this lies in our future development. Some of us have some of these bodies that we're operating in now. And this is, again, perhaps a topic of another show. But, you know, there's always more. There's always next. There's never the end of your unfoldment and your development. So, again, conscious participation in your life. Stay present and love where you are on the way to where you're headed. And know the closeness with the Lord and with your masters. Trust with all your heart. And know that their promise of nearness and protection and provision is true, and you can rely on it. Make trust and faith your automatic response to all the events of life. Cast out doubt and cynicism, fear and irritation from you as if they were venomous snakes, which I assure you they are. So the Shambhala masters will teach every one of us to remain calm and centered no matter what's happening in the outer world. And we will be taught to just remain centered and not to react. And it looks like we've run out of time, so I will have to continue this on another show. But I really, really convey the blessings all the masters of Shambhala to each one of you with deepest love. Baruch Hashem Adonai. Blessed is the name of the Lord. Let's go out chanting Shanti. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.